We may never know, Uther. I intend to live forever.
How dare you show your face here?
Faces.
Don't laugh at that, you idiot!
A lot of story there, a lot of lore. For those of you who are into that kind of thing, I love you.
Welcome to Live, Laugh, Lore, the podcast that explores where we've been and where we may go next in the world of Warcraft.
Welcome, everyone, to Live, Laugh, Lore, episode 101, the show that's got to get back in time. Each episode, we'll check in, have some laughs, and talk all about the lore of Warcraft, one or 553 topics at a time.
Exactly that many.
My name is Jen. And I will be your professor for the next hour or so. If you get through the coughing, we'll be fine. And assisting me today is my co-professor specializing in all things Dungeons and Raids. It's Allie.
Oh, I specialize in them, all right.
Yeah. Hey, just so you know, there's no profession in the world that isn't an open book. So, you know, you can always just reference.
This is true.
It's fine. You don't have to have it all memorized. It's good.
It's fine.
Yeah. Sweetie. So, Allie, what you been up to? How you been? Huh?
Well, one of my things, you having yours, so I'm going to leave that there and we'll talk about it when you talk about it. I have two new goals in Warcraft. One of them's obvious. We'll get to that in a minute. But the second one is they announced the meta achievement for the expansion, and the reward is something I've been wanting since we were introduced to this character.
What is the meta achievement? You're gonna have to.
Well, first off, you have to do like all the things basically in the expansion.
Okay,
right. Do all the races. Do all the. You have to kill like 200 of each storm type in each zone.
Okay.
And for some reasons, I've been Azure spam lately, so it's bugged. It's been reported. It's fine. It is a lot. And there's a lot of things, like you have to open up so many doors in Zakara vaults, but the vaults. You know,
oh wow, there. I'm gonna have to do a lot of those because I opened like five doors in there.
You have to get certain many of the treasures over in Forbidden Reach, and just a whole bunch of, you know, you just do all the things.
You do all the things. Okay.
You get a mount. It's not the Infinite Empire Dragon mount.
Oh, that's, okay. Well, now I'm like,
that's a tragedy.
My hype went down.
It's Tavon.
Oh, yeah. It's the guy.
The best doggo.
The best doggo of them all. Yeah. Okay.
When they introduced that, I was so... I wanted it as a mount, but I was content to have it as a toy. I'm sure I've mentioned it in past episodes back when that was a, new storyline.
Yeah.
Because it's the best doggo. And now we get to have it as a mount.
A big,
which means
fluffy, mounty doggo, yeah.
Which means I am doing all the work for all these achievements because that mount will be mine, because that is the best doggo.
I don't think I'll ever get that dog, because every single time they've introduced these, like, do all the things... achievements, I'm like, that's too many things.
It is a lot. It honestly, I have, thankfully, this expansion, I've actually done a good amount of it.
Yeah, because you did all the races.
I've done a good amount. So like, it's not terrible. I've never actively gone for the meta achievement on purpose in the past.
Yeah, I kind of like the spinny wheel thing.
It just
from
takes
Mechagon.
Time.
Never did that. Like,
right, exactly. But for the best doggo, I will do it.
Oh, okay.
And I will get the best doggo because I love him so much.
Yeah,
and I need it.
He's a good doggo.
So it's definitely kind of, it's giving me a goal to work towards, which is nice. It's refreshing. It's, also a little maddening when the right storm isn't up in the right area and all that kind of jazz. But you know what? It's all part of it. And I'm determined that dog will be mine. This is a goal. Well, we are now on Tyvon watch for the next little bit here. I'll keep everyone updated with how we're going with this. Yep.
Beautiful.
And then, of course, I've been a plundering in the storms.
Mm-hmm.
Surprise. It's pirates that I'm doing.
Pirates. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Got it.
I know it's been hit and miss in the community. Before I get into my spiel, like, because I saw you doing it a little bit the other day, like, how are you feeling about the plunder storm?
Meh. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. Like, it's very underwhelming, in my opinion, because I didn't look at any guides. I didn't do anything. I was just like, I'll just try to dive right in. I'll see what's going on. Like, I know it's kind of like a Fortnite style of gameplay, even though I've never played Fortnite or any of those other kind of games.
It's kind of sad there's no building involved, because apparently that's like a thing that you can do in Fortnite, to build a thing. So, oh well, no building. It's like, okay, you dive bomb from your parrot and you try and get that one quick insta-kill on like a big mob, because that's nice.
Yep.
Get a little,
yep,
little early start, and then I run around and kill things. And then basically what I've discovered is if I can avoid people, like if I play this game, like real, my real life, like I see someone in a grocery store that I know and I dive under a freaking shelf somewhere. If I play Plunderstorm like that, then I'm at least like end up at like seventh. Like I've never.
Yeah.
I think I've come in fifth place before, but it's not like it's a sense of accomplishment for me, though. I'm just like, okay, cool.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, I don't hate it. Like, this is not me hating on it. It's just not really my vibe of gameplay, I guess.
Yeah, and that's, like I said, it's like, it definitely feels like it's been hit and miss in the community. I know for myself, like, okay, obviously there's a pirate bias. Pirate buyers. There's a pirate bias, and obviously I need all the transmog because
transmog pirates, does look pretty good.
I mean, I'm the pirate queen. It must all be mine. But, like, let me preface this by saying, obviously I had that bias, but also I've never played a battle royale type game. I've never played Fortnite or anything like that. And while I do mainly PvE, I did do a decent amount of PvP back in, like, Burning Crusade, and I've dabbled off and on since then when I, you know, feel like I need to murder people. And especially if you get to mind control them off cliffs, that's pretty awesome.
Or relive those mines days as a rogue.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the rogue. Yeah. I'll definitely break her out, because definitely like Wrathy Basin mines,
mm-hmm, yep, yep,
on my rogue. Like that's where I lived in Burning Crusade half the time.
Yep.
So
good times.
Yeah. It was good times. It was good times. Yeah. But so I do have a little bit of that PvP background. And between that and the pirates and the fact that it just, each round goes fairly quickly and you can do it however you want. Like you can do the more PvE kill things and try to avoid other players and last pretty long. Most games, there's always exceptions to that.
Like if someone finds you, jerk.
Well, and it's hard. Like, so I have my particular spot that I like landing. Okay. Like I like landing in the coal bowl mine or the little settlement like right next to it, because there's a lot of elites on those two areas. But other people have cut on to how great these areas are. So if other people are landing in my areas and pissing me off, either I die or they're gonna die, and I'm gonna laugh an evil laugh when I kill them. So I'm enjoying it. Yeah, I'm not gonna say every match has been awesome. There were definitely some bugs in the beginning that were annoying, and they've worked hard to fix those. And yeah, there are some matches where if I just don't get what I need, it definitely feels not balanced when I'm a level 7 with a couple of greens and a couple of blue skills, and I'm going up against a level 10 that has all purples. Like, it's going to happen, you know, but, and I haven't won yet. Definitely not won. I've placed, like, my average is around 10 to 12, but I've gotten a lot of fifth place as well. I think I got one fourth place. I think that might be my best one. But I haven't quite got that first place yet. And if I get first, cool. If not, like, I'm not, it's fine. It's just a feat of strength. My knowledge doesn't come with any cosmetic or anything. So if I get it, cool. If not, that's fine.
You just gotta freaking grind out that rep. That's all you really gotta do. It's like, yeah, the only thing that you can really get out of it.
Yeah. And because it all goes, I mean, because each match goes pretty quickly. And again, pirates, so I'm in love. I'm honestly liking Plunderstorm a lot and doing it a lot. I'm on Renown 20. 21, something like that. So I'm up
there.
There's a lot of people that are already done but at like 40. It's crazy. No, I'm at 20, like, or 21.
I'm like a five, maybe four.
Right. But yeah, so I'm really enjoying it. And one thing I really like is that they're doing something new and they're trying things out. Like I've always said this, especially a lot in the last couple of years, where it's MMOs getting old, and to keep it going, keep it fresh, they've got to try new things. And so this is what they're doing. They're trying something new, and they're doing it in such a way that kind of gives them a platform and the ability to try other new things, because it is that like standoffish, like still in the same client but different area of the client, whatever thing they're doing. Like it gives them that freedom to do other things in the future. So I'm excited. Like I saw one comment on Twitter somewhere where someone said they should do Mario Kart style, and that would be amazing. Can you imagine how much fun that would be? Oh my gosh.
I'll be perfectly honest. It's like if they did that, I'd feel like it would just be bad Mario Kart. Right?
It's like, I mean, probably, but it'd still be fun.
Yeah, but it's like, why are we wasting our time on bad Mario Kart when we can just play Mario Kart? Come on.
For the cosmetics, Jin. Come on.
Okay. Like, can we just do the regular thing that we do? That's what I like. Let's do the good stuff. Like, come on. Don't do Mario Kart. Like, there are Mario Kart already exists.
Anyways, yeah, I know it's hit and miss in the community, and I totally understand the reasons why. Personally, I'm having a lot of fun with it, and I wish I was plundering right now, but I'm here talking with you, which I also enjoy. So speaking of which, what have you been up to?
A lot of things and not many things all at once. So yeah, it's been a very busy couple weeks. It has been just very kind of chaotic and nuts, but I also bought a new car, so that's fun.
Yeah, you did.
I got a new car. It's very fancy. I like it. It's good. But that's not really what I'm going to talk about. I don't really care. It's a good car. Yay. no, there's something that I would like to talk about that is a blast from my past, and it is freaking amazing, and I love it more than like I've ever seen any. Like, this is the greatest thing ever, and that is the new X-Men 97 series.
Yes, it's so good. Oh, my God.
Now, obviously, only two episodes are out as of this recording. So maybe they could do something just that horrible and just ruin everything by episode 10. But I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think so.
Like, this is really freaking good. That's all I'm saying. So that's all I want to say. If you haven't seen X-Men 97, you should check it out. Give it a watch, especially if you were addicted to the old series like I was back in the day. Because
yeah. I watched the old series a lot. Yeah, I watched the old series a lot. I read the original comics because my dad had a ton of comics, so I spent a lot of summers in the basement playing video games or in comics. But I was a little worried when they first announced there was gonna be a remake, and then I saw the trailer. I'm like, oh, well, this might actually be good. And now it's out, like, holy crap. Like, just when the theme song comes on and it's the same one, like,
the best. Both
my husband and I were watching it together, and we both got chills, and it was so awesome. And like the way they handled the drawing of the cartoon. Like, it's a very natural thing if it's right. And, like, it's just, yeah. They have done such a great job, and I'm so pleased right now.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's just amazing. Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all I got to say. It's amazing. If you want to check it out, definitely check it out. Speaking of amazing things checking out, I don't know. It's Patreon time, Allie. It's this segue ended. That was bad.
It was great. It was fantastic. Sure. Hey there, listeners. Today's episode is something a little out of the norm for this show and was put together to both help the community and to celebrate how far the show has come. If you enjoy this craziness and want to support more things like it, keep listening until the end of the episode to find out how.
What you talking about? What you talking about? What you talking about? What you talking about?
So if you didn't know this, World of Warcraft has a problem, and it's not one that can be easily solved. And we, as a little community, can voice our opinions and log our complaints with Blizzard, but this problem runs really deep, and there's likely no single solution that will ever solve it. So, what exactly is the problem? It's that new players have no idea what the story of World of Warcraft even is. And if Blizzard is planning on putting the narrative at the forefront of the development and get up at BlizzCon and talk about the whole World Soul Saga or whatever their new plan is for the future, it would help if the new players could enjoy the hype as well. But right now, if all they have to go off of is what's in the game, they may never be able to figure out what's going on. So, that's what this episode is. It is Warcraft Lore 101. See? Episode 101. It's Warcraft Lore. See?
That's good. That's actually pretty creative. Like that.
So, if you have a friend or anyone that's interested in the lore and they don't know where to start, this episode is for them. So, share it out. Let me maybe make a few more lore fans out there. So, we're going to go ahead and just kick this off, and we're going to kick it off right from the beginning. So just like Julie Andrews once said, let's start at the very beginning, a very good place to start. We're going to do just that. So what was at the very beginning of the Warcraft cosmos? According to Chronicle Volume 1, the answer was light, or more specifically, the light. And over the course of who knows how long, because this is like cosmic timescales that no one has any idea about. Just break. It's just cosmos. Okay. Pockets of darkness and eddies in the light began to form and eventually became what is now known as the Void. So those were the kind of the two original cosmic forces. Okay, And eventually those two cosmic forces would collide and go kaboom. Hey, okay? I'm just like, you know, you touch, kaboom. All right. That's literally the World of Warcraft version of the Big Bang. Okay. And from it rose all the reality toward the great dark beyond, or space. Great dark beyond equals space, just all you need to know. And the realm of the chaotic energies and the twisting nether and all that good stuff. Well, and as well as the other four cosmic forces, life, death, order, chaos, you know, and that's fell. And that's all you need to know about the creation of the universe, at least as we currently understand it. We're not going to talk about first ones or anything like that. This is this is the basics. We're not getting into that crap
101.
Yet. 101.
That's like 104 or something. We don't even have that information yet. Yeah,
that's in speculation territory. So we're going to move into the beginnings of what you could basically blame everything on. The Titans.
Yes. And just like the Big Bang of our own reality, planets and solar systems were formed over unknown amounts of time, and found within some of these planets were world souls, which eventually awoke and became Titans. The first to emerge was Amenthul, the Highfather, and he spent his time trying to find more beings just like him. And after an insane amount of time, eventually the Pantheon was formed after he found six more Titans, and they are, in order of importance, Sargeras, Agrimmar, Ianar, Norgannon, Norgannon, I don't know why I say that one weird, Khazgaroth, and Golgoneth. You could probably forget about that last one. Golgoneth's usually forgotten. It's fine.
He doesn't do anything.
Yeah. The seven of them spent their time doing what beings of pure order do. They tried to put things in order, specifically planets, because empty space, it's pretty damn boring. And that was going along fine until the beings of pure order discovered the beings of pure chaos, demons. Naturally, the two of them did not get along. Job of eradicating the demons was given to Sargeras, who was also aided by Agrimmar. So these two, you know, colossal titans got to work killing, quote unquote killing, any demon they found, only to later run into a demon they totally killed before, which would probably piss anyone off. This is when Sargeras found out that demons just, they don't die. They just go back to Twisted Nether, where they eventually return from, all rejuvenated and everything, and cause more chaos. Okay, so no more, no, okay, you know, new plan. No more killing demons. Lock the demons up in a pocket dimension known as Mardoon. Problem solved. Ready to go.
Yeah. Okay, now for the fun to begin. So that was all background stuff. So, Dieran Sargeras' endless quest to rid the universe of demons and their horrible, horrible chaos, he stumbled across a planet that was infested by massive eldritch horrors and was radiating pure void energies. And to make matters worse, this planet contained a world soul, and it was corrupted to the point that if it woke up, it would have been a void titan. So it would have been a titan corrupted by void energies. Got it? Got it. This, to Sargeras' horror, was the void's plan. From their dimension of the void or whatever, they witnessed what the Titan Pantheon was up to, and they wanted to get in on that action. So, in an attempt to create their very own Titan that would serve the void, they expelled, I don't know, like sneezed, I guess, expelled void energies out into reality that took the shape of old gods. So, here's Sargeras looking down on this world and not really knowing what to do. And what does he see but some Nathrezim, or Dreadlords? There are some Dreadlords on this planet, and they're just kind of chilling out down there on the planet, and they let him know what's going on with the void. They told him that the void's ultimate plan was to consume all of reality. And this is when Sargeras had a bit of a change of heart. First, he destroyed the void-infested world with one swing of his massive sword. Sword. My nerd gutter. And after some unproductive conversations with the Pantheon, so he did go talk to the Pantheon about this, he eventually released the demons that he and Agrimmar had imprisoned in Mardoon and set them on a mission to destroy all life. Because if there is no life left in the universe, there's nothing the void can corrupt. This was the birth of the Burning Legion.
And around the same time, Sargeras was off dealing with the void world, a lot of pouting before forming the Burning Legion. The rest of the Titans, they were busy too. They discovered the greatest and most best world soul of them all, Azeroth.
It is the most best world, yes.
That is exactly what the notes say, people. It's not just me. The Titans immediately thought they needed to do everything they could to save this world, especially considering it had all gods all over it. During those unproductive conversations with the Pantheon, Sargeras did tell the others about the void-infested world he destroyed. So at least they knew what these old gods were, but they also knew that they couldn't just kill the world either. So the Titans got to work on Azeroth and created Titanforge beings that could wage war on the face of the planet without just destroying the whole thing, since the Titans are pretty damn big. Out of their creations, the Titans handpicked the ones that would lead the fight against the old gods, the Titan Keepers. Amon-Thul empowered High Keeper Ra and Keeper Odin, Mr. You know, Lava Beer there. Next, Khazgroth turned Arcadis into Bob the Builder. Gokanath hyped up Thorim and Hodir.
Oh,
yeah. Ianar gave some of her nature-loving ways to Freya. Norgannon passed on his mastery of the arcane magic to Loken and Mimiron. And Agrimmar taught Keeper Tyr, we've spent some time with Tyr this expansion, how to be an absolute badass. That's right. And just like that, the Titans had an army. They sent them after the old gods and their forces. Now, first up, they had to take out the elemental lords that the old gods had enslaved. Boom. That's done. And with the help of the amazing Titanforge sorcerer, Helia, the elemental lords were locked away in their corresponding elemental plane. So that's, you know, Ragnaros and
Alakir.
Neptulon. Alakir.
Yeah. And Therizane, I believe her name is.
Yes. And with the first distraction out of the way, it was time to go over the big squishy bits themselves, the old gods. And that's when things got a little dicey, since the battle plan was to go after the biggest and baddest of them all, Ysarj, which we've probably said wrong this entire time. It's fine, we're going with it. And while they're fresh from the fight, things they didn't go so well. It went so poorly, in fact, that Amon-Thul himself got impatient and just freaking ripped the Ysarj right from the planet's crust, nearly killing the world soul in the process.
So, if you've ever wondered why you're supposed to push an arrow through the body and not pull it straight out, this is why. Ysarj was so deeply embedded into Azeroth that a massive crater full of arcane energies from the world soul was left behind. This would eventually be stabilized in the form of a massive lake known as the Well of Eternity. More on that later. The plan was going forward. Was now all about imprisoning the old gods, not destroying them, as it was clear there was no way not to harm or possibly kill Azeroth's world soul in the process if they did. Okay, just imprison the old gods. Don't kill them. They don't know how to do that. So that's what they did. They successfully imprisoned Yogg-Saron, C'Thun, and N'Zoth. And now that the war was over, it was time to start ordering the planet. Highest priority was to get Azeroth healthy again, obviously. They did that with the Forge of Wills and the Forge of Origination. So both of these Titan facilities, which there are many of Titan facilities, these just happen to be two of them, they served two purposes. First, the number one priority was to draw in cosmic power of spirit, right? They were drawing in all this cosmic power, specifically spirit, and it was to feed it to the world soul to get it healthy again. Second, the Forge of Wills is built to create more Titan Forge, like a really big fancy 3D printer. And the Forge of Origination was a safety measure. If Azeroth ever got overtaken by the Void or anything else ever again, they would hit the beep boop and reset the whole damn planet into its primordial origins. And once the Titans got everything to a point that was self-sustaining, they felt comfortable to continue their search for more Titans, and they left Azeroth.
And after Azeroth was ordered, Agrimmar found another world that caught his eye. Didn't have a world soul, so he felt he could be a little more reckless in his ordering. Because why not? Well, this planet would eventually be named Draenor, but at this point, it's just a planet full of plants. That's way too many plants. So to fix this, Agrimmar animated a mountain, which he named Grond. Grond was created to try and bring balance to the world that was overrun by plants, to the point that there were these massive spore mound creatures that called themselves the Evergrowth. Anyway, things went pretty well. Draenor got set in order. So here's a super quick recap. Grond took out two of the three spore mounds, but the third one ripped the living mountain apart with its vines. Too bad that when you bust open living rocks into smaller rocks, you just get a lot of smaller living rocks. Anyway, these smaller but still huge rocks defeated the last giant plant. In time, these living rocks became smaller and smaller, eventually becoming ogres and even orcs. The plants are still around too, but much smaller. They call themselves the Botani. And you don't need to worry about them, though. That's a Warlords of Draenor thing. It's fine.
Yeah, you're fine.
They have a fun dance, though. I like them.
Yeah, they do.
The fun toy.
Mm-hmm. All right. We've got Azeroth and Draenor. Now let's find out what happened with the Titans. So, long story short, Sargeras confronted them after starting his Burning Legion and becoming a fell Titan. So Amathul tried to convince him that they had a better way of dealing with the Void, and it was the World Soul of Azeroth. Well, negotiations broke down, and Sargeras killed them all. And he, because he was able to, like, go, I got fell power now! And he just, like, megazorded them all, and all six of them got killed up in the big old fell. Okay, in a massive attack, he destroyed all six of his former Pantheon members. However, Norgannon, or what are we saying now? Norgannon? I don't know.
I've heard it both ways. I've heard it both ways too. The wrong person to ask.
So, Norgannon is really good with magic, and he cast a spell that wrapped their Titan essences in a sphere of arcane magic and transported them to Azeroth, where their spirits went into the Titan Keepers that they had empowered. Yes, that means portions of Amathul went into Ra and Odin, as well as Morgana. Just go with it, right? And just whatever.
Yeah.
So this certainly caused some problems. Now, no one was able to stand in Sargeras's way in wiping out all life in the universe, but he also had a problem. The Titans told him about Azeroth, but they didn't tell him where it was. So he needed to go looking. This also caused some problems with the Titan Keepers back in Azeroth. None of them knew why they suddenly felt like they had just lived millions of lifetimes all of a sudden. This right here is what caused a lot of harm that no one would have predicted. But before we get into that, let's first go over the events that took place on Azeroth while the Titans were away, but still alive. Most notable was the rise of Galakrond. And anyone who's played through Dawn of the Infinite's Mega Dungeon knows.
So proud of you.
Galakrond was a massive primal dragon that was defeated by five other primal dragons, but little. Like normal sized primal dragon. Little, just normal. Little compared to Galakrond. Okay. Yeah. So Galakrond was the result of some Titan meddling, possibly. Or just some really bad luck when he drank water that had been affected by Yogg-Saron. Okay. This caused him to grow to an enormous size, and he even started eating other dragons in an attempt to end his endless hunger. This whole eating other dragon things did not sit well with basically all other dragons. You know, that's not great. And it didn't sit well with Keeper Tyr either. It was him that found the five dragons, Alex, Straza, Ysera, Nazdormu, Malagos, and Neltharion, and aided them in defeating Galakrond. And after witnessing how the five of them worked together, Tyr had the idea to empower these dragons, beings of Azeroth's elemental power themselves, as the protectors of this world. Well, Odin didn't care for this idea one bit, and he instructed Helya to take a portion of the Titan facility Ulduar, where Yogg was imprisoned, and turned it into a flying fortress, so Odin took his ball and went home. So that's why he's up in the sky holder. I don't know what to name the place is.
Aren't you worried? Valor,
whatever. He's gone.
I judge you.
Shh. It's fine. It only made sense to the rest of the Keepers to task the natives of Azeroth to protect their home, so they empowered the dragons with the power of the Titans, thus creating the dragon aspects and the five dragon flights in the process.
Okay, back to Sargeras killing the Titans. Well, each of the Titan Keepers fell into a bit of a depression when the Titan essences took up residence in their bodies. More than others. High Keeper Ra took it the hardest because he was the only one that knew what it all meant, that the Titans were dead. Next, Loken and Thorim had a rough go of it as well. So what happened? Thorim had himself a wife, girlfriend, whatever, named Sif. And when the Titan souls crashed into the Keepers, they were all, very confused. Loken, Thorim's brother, yes, these are based off of the Norse names, confided in Sif, and a relationship started to grow. To the point that it got a little scandalous. Just a wee bit. A little scandalous.
A lot of scandalous, actually.
Yeah, it's a lot of scandalous. Well, Sif decided that she had made a mistake, and that was never going to happen again. Loken then proceeded to prove to all of the world that he's a massive loser and can't take rejection. So he killed Sif. Yeah.
That's really unhealthy behavior.
just a little bit. Yeah. Now an important point here is that the Titans locked up all the old gods. But just like a lot of the prisoners who can still have an impact on the outside world, Yogg-Saron still managed to get up in there with some shenanigans. Yogg saw this whole debacle go down between Thorim and Loken and Sif and just had to take advantage of it. So Yogg-Saron appeared to Loken as Sif's ghost and told him, "Hey, I don't blame you, but you're going to need to cover up what happened." So he got to work on his cover-up. First, he tricked Thorim into believing that it was the ice giants that killed Sif. Yes, more Norse mythology. We know there's plenty of it in this game. And just to rub salt in the wound, after Thorim went to war with the ice giants, Loken used the Forge of Wills, under direction of Yogg, to build a new army. But little did he know that Yogg had used his ghost Sif to tamper with the forge and injected the curse of flesh into the army. And any Titan forge that came in contact with one corrupted with the curse of flesh would also slowly transition from their stone and metal bodies to one of flesh and blood. Hence, you know, curse of flesh. So Loken managed to use the new army he created to end the conflict between Thorim and the Ice Giants. And to make matters worse, Loken told Thorim how mad Sif would be at him if she could see what he had done. As you can imagine, poor Thorim, my guy, he took it really hard and he went and hid in the mountains. You can't not say that phrase like that. It's just, that's how it goes.
I made sure even Alec when I'm got here, to say that part, yeah.
Thank you, I love you. I mean, even here in the mountains, like in Colorado. In the mountains, it's fine. Anyways, he also managed to take out the rest of the keepers with the exception of Tyr and Arcadis. Oh, and Arcadis's girlfriend, Irenaya. Anyways, Tyr came up with a plan to tattle on Loken. He didn't know the Titans were dead at that point. His plan was to sneak back into Alduar, where Loken had sealed himself up in, and take the discs of Norgannon. These discs were created by Loken and Mimran as a gift to the Titans when they departed Azeroth. It would record all the history of the Titans, could find out what the Keepers have been up to in their absences, all of that. It was a perfect plan to prove that Loken was a dirty, dirty liar and get him in trouble with Almond Thule. You know, tell daddy on Loken. Too bad. He was dead at this point. Kind of. Yeah, we talked about that. Well, the plan went off great. They got these discs and began running south with their prize until Loken realized the discs were gone. So he sent two of Yogg-Saron's greatest generals to stop Tyr. They were these massive servants of the old gods known as Cathraxi, and they look kind of like giant lobster dudes. They do. It's great. Their names were Zakajaz and Kithix.
Zakajaz.
That's how we say it. Again, it's probably wrong. It's just that's how we say it.
Well, right, we know here how it's supposed to be said. It's supposed to be Zakaj.
That's less fun. It's Zakajaz. It's just so much more fun. Zakajaz. You gotta have fun with it. Well, when the two of them caught up with Tyr, he told Arcadis and Irenaya to run for it and to take the Vrykul with them. Now, in case you're wondering, the Vrykul were once Titan forged, but then they were infected by the curse of flesh, and Tyr, you know, he took pity on many that were outcast from their homes for being weak. They would later become humans.
Yes.
Hint, hint, nudge, nudge.
Yep, yep.
Tyr stood his ground while Arcadis and Irenaya followed his orders. The battle between him and the Cathraxi was just straight up legendary. It was amazing. Tyr ultimately won, but he had to sacrifice himself in order to do so. So Arcadis and Irenaya, why do I have a hard time with that? Irenaya.
I've always had a hard time with that name.
Right? It flows off the tongue a little too well, so you just like want to keep adding things to it. I don't know. Irenaya. Arcadis and Irenaya managed to escape with the discs, though, and they hid it in the Titan facility, Alduman.
All right. You ready for some Burning Legion action? Yeah, because that's what we're getting into. Well, Sargeras and his Burning Legion had a problem. A really big problem. You see, Sargeras is a being of pure order. Later, he infused himself with a bit of the fell, right? He's like, ah, fell beard.
Just a bit.
Just a little bit. A little bit of disorder in there, a little chaos and order mixed together, but still primary order. Okay. Demons, on the other hand, they're not orderly one bit. They're just like, blah! It's just no order in there one at all. So he needed someone to lead the demons. He can't be everywhere all at once. He can be, right. He's very powerful, but he's still just one dude. So
That's where he's went to look and just find someone that he could, you know, put in charge. And he found that in the form of the Eredar. All right. They were living in the world of Argus. Eredar were a super advanced race that were led by a triumvirate.
Triumvirate?
Yeah, whatever. It's a weird word. So the three members of that group were Kil'jaeden, Archimonde, and Velen. So when Sargeras appeared before the three of them, he told them how he would make them more powerful and they would just be so awesome. And they could even imagine how Kil'jaeden and Archimonde ate it up. They were just like, it's the best. I love it. I want to be so powerful. Velen, however, saw through his trick and took about one third of the Eredar and fled the planet with the help of three creatures of pure light known as Naru. Okay? Which are formed during the original Big Bang. Remember that Big Bang we talked about? Big Bang?
Yeah, there were shards of light that landed places. And the shards of light turned into Naru. There you go.
Kil'jaeden took this very personally, as he and Velen had been very good friends. So old KJ made it his personal mission to hunt down Velen. And just like that, two-thirds of Eredar became Sargeras' battlefield commanders, who were led by Kil'jaeden and Archimonde, while the remaining one-third renamed themselves Draenei, or Exiled Ones in the Eredar language. Velen and the rest of the Draenei spent thousands of years running from the Burgeoning Legion, always trying to stay one step ahead of Kil'jaeden. And they were successful because Velen had an ability to see the future with the help of the light and the Naru. Well, they continued to run for as long as they could, until they landed on Draenor. And their little Naru ship that they had been using to travel between worlds is busted.
Is busted. Man, they're stranded.
All right. Sargeras and his legion really kicking into high gear at this point. And they figured most important secret that Amethyst had kept from him, the location of Azeroth. You see, mortal races, they've been springing up all over Azeroth at this point. And one such race were the Trolls. Now, the Trolls pretty much expanded across the entire world. One tribe known as the Dark Trolls settled along the banks of the Well of Eternity. As we briefly talked about, this was what was left behind when Amethul ripped Ysarge out. Didn't go well. The lake was teeming with arcane energy. The energy transformed these nocturnal dark trolls into the Night Elves we now know today. And the Night Elven society used arcane magic like it was going out of style. Yep. This was the equivalent of setting off a signal flare to Sargeras. And one fateful night, a highborn elf by the name of Exavius was experimenting with the arcane when he discovered the fell Titan Sargeras. Now, he knew that his queen, the pretty Ashara, would want to know about this right away. She was hot for some Sargeras action.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what you need to know about the Night Elves is that they worship the moon, or at least the moon goddess Alun, and they named their capital city Alundris.
Yeah. Alundris, yes.
Alundris. I don't know if it looks weird to me. In her honor. But then along came Ashara, who became their queen. And they loved her so much that they renamed the capital Zin Ashari. They basically worshipped her. Like, it was intense. Now, it's not 100% clear, but it's speculated that she was so adored by the Night Elves because she was the most wonderful, powerful wielder with arcane to ever live and used it to make everyone love her. Which, honestly, I think that's entirely possible.
Yeah, I mean,
like, the amount of worship, it was crazy.
There's a point in the story that we'll get to remember that when Manoroth took one look at Ashara and was like, oh, I can't even mess with her. Yeah. She'd wipe the floor with me. So yeah, she was insanely powerful.
Right. Which is something to keep in mind for the World Soul Saga.
Yeah.
Just saying, she should probably come around again at some point. Anyways, so when Exavius told Ashara about Sargeras, she was overjoyed to finally discover someone she believed to be her equal. Seriously, she believed she was going to marry Sargeras. Like, they were going to become one, probably rule everything. I don't know. Just she wanted him bad. The only problem was that Sargeras was essentially on the other side of the universe. Just a little problem. You know, just a little bee bump.
Minor.
Yeah, just a little bit. So in order to get him to Azeroth in a timely manner, he would need to take a portal. And the only source of arcane energy that was powerful enough to bring a Titan through was the Well of Eternity. Well, the Highborn Night Elves got to work to turn the Well of Eternity into a portal. And in order to really do that, they had to cut off the rest of the Night Elf population to it. Well, this is what tipped off that there was an issue and conflict arose.
Yeah. So much so that they called this conflict the War of the Ancients. Okay, that's kind of how it started. Night elves suddenly couldn't use the Well of Eternity, and people said, wait a minute, what's going on? And
yeah. Something's not right.
So, here is a very brief summary that took 11 episodes of a previous podcast to cover in detail.
And three novels.
This is my way of saying this is very brief. Demons started showing up across all of Azeroth, including a demon known as a Pit Lord Manoroth. We just mentioned him a second ago, saying like, oh, damn, Ashara is very powerful. Okay. You'll see him again. Okay. Because Ashara and her Highborn had gotten help from the Burning Legion to turn the Well of Eternity into a portal. Night Elves, following the command of Kertalos Ravencrest, or Ravencrest, most people just call him, put together an opposition force to fight back against demons. Now, this is an important point. Because they believed Ashara was captured by these demons, because there was no way their amazing, wonderful queen would ever do anything to harm her people because she's amazing.
Of course.
Yeah. This is when we are first introduced to the characters Tyrande Whisperwind, Malfurion Stormrage, and his twin brother, Illidan Edgelord Stormrage.
Totally his name.
Yeah. All right, both brothers had a big ol' crush on Tyrande, but it was clear that she liked Malfurion because Illidan was an impatient little twit. Like, he was annoying. I mean, all he really cared about is like, I want power. Well, Malfurion was super patient. He became known. He was the very first mortal druid under the guidance of the wild god Cenarius. Okay, what's a wild god? Wild gods are just naturally occurring, very powerful spirits. Except in the case of Cenarius, his mom is a loon, his dad is Malorn. Okay, it's weird. All right, so the three of them joined the fight against the demons. And Illidan actually became the right-hand sorcerer to Commander Ravencrest, because he was actually pretty good at the arcane. He really was. It's eventually figured out how the well was being blocked off from the rest of the Night Elves, and Malfurion was able to destroy the device that was blocking it, and he actually killed Xavius in the process. Sargeras, on the other hand, he had different plans for Xavius, and he turned him into the very first satyr, and he sent him back to Azeroth. He's like, get your ass back in the game, man. Come on, back in there. Just respawn, it'll be fine. All right, this war has continued to get so bad that even the dragon aspects took notice. You know, demons up in your world, the dragons are probably going to notice, right? And Neltharion, remember Neltharion, one of the dragons, he was Earth Warder, you know. He put together a plan to quickly rid the world of these demons. Or so we thought. You see, each of the dragon aspects had been granted dominion over different aspects of life in Azeroth. Alexstrasza was known as the Lifebinder, and she was in charge of all living things. Ysera, the Dreamer, was put in charge of the mysterious realm known as the Emerald Dream. The Titans said it was an exact copy of a primordial Azeroth that could be used to restart life from a previous point if the Forge of Origination was ever needed to be used. Nazdormu, the Timeless One, was put in charge of the ever-chaotic timelines, and he was supposed to protect the one true timeline. Malagos, or the Spellweaver, was put in charge of all magic, especially arcane. And finally, Neltharion, the Earth Warder, was placed in charge of the Deep Places, or all of the planet and its rocky bits. Well, the problem with putting someone in charge of the Earth is that's where the old gods live. And the Agents of the Void did a really good job of driving him insane over the course of 20,000 years.
Yes, Neltharion revealed his plan to the others, and it was to have all dragons give a portion of their power and to put it all into a single golden disc that Neltharion would wield in battle to obliterate anyone that would stand in his way. And all of that was true. The only part he lied about is just a little thing. It's just a little thing. He considered everyone an enemy when he unleashed the power of the Dragon Soul. So when the rest of the dragons saw what he was doing, Malagos' blue dragons took flight to stop him. But Neltharion turned his device on them as well, and he killed off most of the blue dragons. Like, they were almost obliterated. It was pretty bad.
I think it was about 90% that got killed in that first attack.
Something like that, yeah. And as you can imagine, Malagos took that pretty rough. He was in a pretty deep depression that he would never recover from. It broke him. It straight up broke Malagos. Especially because Malagos and Neltharion, they were best buds. You know, just, yeah, it's rough. This was the moment that Neltharion took on a new name, Deathwing. And just like that, there wasn't really anything that could be done. So the rest of the dragons fled, as well as the armies on both sides. And at this point, everyone knew that they would need to get the dragon soul, or as the rest of the dragons were calling it now, the demon soul, out of the hands of Deathwing. And it was ultimately Illidan and Malfurion that managed to get the demon soul. And Malfurion was even able to use the demon soul at the 11th hour during the battle and used it to destroy the Well of Eternity just when Sargeras was coming through the portal. Like, just in the nick of time, stopped it. It was good. Now, before we end the discussion on the War of the Ancients, there are just a couple of things we need to point out. Illidan, he switched sides a few times. And that is how he got his eyeballs burned out and became the very first demon hunter. Sargeras himself granted Illidan the, quote, gift of true sight by burning out his eyes and gave him a glimpse of the vastness of the Legion's armies. And that's when Illidan swapped back, because that scared the shit out of him.
It did.
Yeah.
It's like no.
They actually kind of go over it. Some of the Illidan book is, it was pretty cool. Next, yes, there were some time travelers that took part in the adventures, but that would just be confusing at this point since we're trying just to cruise through this. Tyrande, well, she was made High Priestess of the Temple of Ilune, effectively making her the new leader. Once everyone figured out Ashara wasn't actually the good person they were worshiping. Now, when Malfurion destroyed the Well of Eternity to close the portal, that is what caused the Sundering, or the sudden onset of the Continental Drift in Azeroth. And the Maelstrom was the remnants of the Well of Eternity, because all the continents that we know right now, Aesir, Kingdoms, Kalimdor, all of that, they used to be all just one big landmass. And then the Sundering happened, and then they all kind of just drifted apart.
Thanks, Malfurion.
The Continental Drift. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, come on, Continental
explosion.
Drift, Continental Drift, or Sargeras?
I'll go with
which Gary. One do you want, Jin?
Yeah. I'm not blaming him, but it's just like, thanks, Malfurion. Jerk.
Right. And finally, Illidan was locked up for his crimes. There were a lot. Most notable being him creating a new Well of Eternity at the top of Mount Hyjal, and him killing, or nearly killing, several night elves that tried to stop him from doing so, because, you know, it was a well that drew the demon's attention in the first place. They weren't really keen on having another one.
Yeah.
Didn't like that he stole a vial from the original one to make a new one. It was a whole
pretty
thing.
Pretty sure he stole six vials.
Yeah.
It's like six or seven vials that he took, yeah.
Something like that, yeah. Well, that's when the dragon aspect stepped in to fix Illidan's blunder, and they planted a world tree to hide the arcane magic, as well as bless the tree to get the Night Elves three gifts. First, Alexstrasza gave the tree a bit more vim and vigor, which the Night Elves also got. Ysera made accessing the Emerald Dream super easy for Malfurion and his druids, so they can go sleepy sleeps. And finally, Nazdormu said, hold my beer, and gave them all immortality.
Yeah, the other two were kind of like, yeah, this is really nice. And he's like, immortality. Yeah, for sure, yes. You see, and Alex Strasser looking at him like, you ass. you said to one-up us like that?
Yep.
All right, at this point, we're going to be fast-forwarding 10,000 years. And if you're wondering, yes, there are things that happen, but it's not the 101 class. It's not the 101 class. There's a lot
that
happened
in between there. 103.
Yeah. All right. We're gonna jump right up to the first war, okay? Or the very first video game for Warcraft, Orcs and Humans. In case you're wondering, first war, Orcs and Humans. All right, at this point, you know that the Orcs came from the living mountain Grond that eventually devolved into the Ogres and Orcs. Humans are similar in Warcraft. Remember the Vrykul that traveled? Yeah, see, Allie told you. So they traveled down south with Tyr, Arcadius, and Irania. That's them. Yep, them's the humans. And after 10,000 years, they created human kingdoms and all that kind of stuff. You get the idea. So how did the orcs get over to Azeroth? That's a great question. Well, that all happened after the Draenei crash landed on the orc homeworld and named it Draenor. Stupid colonizers renaming the planet. Mm-hmm. Well, just like all the time in the past, who killed Jaden and his demon scouts found the Draenei. But this time he wanted to do something different, and he decided to corrupt the native orcs and use them to try and kill Velen and his Draenei. So this is a good thing and a bad thing. Okay, why he's like, I want to do something different. Because what happened previously is Velen kept getting wind of things and he'd take off and run before the demons could get there, right? The Burning Legion would try and show up and he was already gone.
Right.
Kil'jaeden didn't know he was stuck there. If he had just shown up with his demons like all the other times in the past, Velen just would have died. So, but he's like, let's do it sneaky this time. So, hey, Velen, Velen kind of got lucky. All right, so that's the sneaky bit. Anyway, so they're corrupting orcs. So Kil'jaeden, his nickname is the Deceiver. And he was actually really good at convincing people to go along with his plans and make them think they're doing the right thing. And that's what he did to an orc shaman named Ner'zhul. Seriously, remember that name. That one's a really important one. Okay.
Uh-huh.
All right. So he came to him in his dreams at first, and later, even when he was awake, as his dead wife, Rolkhan. In his disguise, Kil'jaeden convinced Ner'zhul that the Draenei were super evil and needed to be destroyed. And just like the Israelites took out the Amalekites, like that bad, he's like, kill them all. What initially confused Ner'zhul was the fact that the Draenei had been super peaceful with the orcs for over 200 years at this point. But as a shaman, he was trained to believe that the spirits of his ancestors. So during a gathering of all of the orc clans at the next Kasharg festival, Ner'zhul announced that he had a vision about what the orcs must do. And Ner'zhul was actually a super well-respected shaman across all the clans. So they took him at his word, and the orcs went to war with the Draenei. Everything seemed to be going well for the orcs. Until one battle in particular where the shaman could no longer call upon the power of the elements. This was possible because shaman do not take the power of the elements as their own, but they ask the elements and they borrow the power, right? And the elements were angry with the orcs. So they're like, no, you can't, nuh-uh, we're not giving you your power no more. And Ner'zhul was like, what is going on? So he needed to get to the bottom of this, and he traveled to an orcish holy site, Ashagun, where the spirits of the orcish dead gathered. Oddly enough, Ashagun was the Draenei ship that crash-landed on the planet about 200 years ago in the past, and thanks to an injured Naru in the ship, the orcish spirits have been attracted to that site ever since.
Yes, my heart just breaks for Ner'zhul. When Ner'zhul arrived at Ashagun, he was horrified to learn that he had been deceived, and Rolkhan was disgusted at her husband. Ner'zhul rode back as fast as he could to inform his clan, but when he returned, his horror continued. When his own apprentice, Gul'dan, had betrayed him and had informed Kil'jaeden and Ner'zhul what Ner'zhul was attempting to do. Around this time, Gul'dan had shown the orcs the solution to their problem with the elements, too. The orcs could no longer be shaman, but they would be warlocks by embracing the demon's fell energy and enticing them over there, you know?
Yummy,
so
yummy.
All the shaman, right? All the shaman that could no longer call the elements was able to wield the fell with devastating effects on the Draenei. Gul'dan embraced Kil'jaeden and the Burning Legion wholeheartedly, like the tool he is. He believed that the orcs would be elevated to a place of power similar to what the Eredar had been. He wanted power above all else, and he was willing to sell his race into servitude to the Burning Legion to get it. So that's when a returning face comes back. The demon Manaroth, talked about him earlier. Well, he shows up again to solidify the orcs into the Burning Legion's hands. The demons offered up his blood to drink, which would then give the orcs the incredible strength and bloodlust, but would put them under the demon control. And all but one clan took up the offer. And when the orcs drank the blood, their once brown skin turned green and their eyes glowed red. After drinking Manaroth's blood, the orcs descended on the Draenei capital city and decimated their population. Outright, it was a lot. Following the fall of Shattrath, what remained of the Draenei went into hiding, and the orcs celebrated their victory over the evil Draenei. Following the celebrations, the orcs woke up to a side effect of using the fell that they were not really warned of. Their world was dying, and the orcs were struggling to feed their people. They needed a way to fix their world, or they would soon be dead. That solution came in the form of a raven.
Yep, and that raven that was flying around Draenor was no bird. In fact, it was a human wizard named Medivh. And he wasn't just any ordinary wizard either. He's a good, great, thumping, great, he's a thumping good one. There you go. He was the guardian of Tirith Fall. And yes, I know we're supposed to be talking about the First War, but this will make sense in a second. All right, let's explain this. So, the Guardian of Tirith Fall was a position that was held by a powerful wizard that was granted the power of the rest of the council members of the Council of Tirith Fall. Okay, a lot of words there. Let's try and break it down. So, the Council of Tirith Fall was a secret organization that's main task was finding and killing demons that began appearing after humanity learned how to use arcane magic. Okay? Remember, night elves were using arcane magic because of the Well of Eternity. Well of Eternity exploded. There was a whole thing with the elves that they still wanted to use arcane magic. Then there was a schism. Part of the elves, they left. They basically got exiled. They became the high elves. Okay? The high elves taught magic to the humans, and humans are... We're humans. We're a little reckless. We learn a new trick, we're going to use it, okay? Well, we didn't know about the side effect of demons when you use arcane magic. And just like any human that, any good human that you know, we're not going to stop using our fossil fuels. I mean, arcane magic. No, we're going to find a way fix the mess and just not tell anyone the horrible side effects. So they created a secret organization to clean up the mess. That was the Council of Tearsfall. Okay. All right. Now I kind of riffed for a second. Where the hell am I in my notes? All right. There you go. They did the thing. Now, why is this important to our guy Medivh? Okay. Well, what's really important is the last Guardian of Tearsfall before Medivh. And that was his mother, Egwene. Okay. She was the brightest and the best student and was one day named the next guardian, blah, blah, blah. Okay, she's a guardian now. However, when her term of 100 years of a guardian was up, yeah, they used magic to increase their lifespan. Okay. She refused to return the power. Now, she had witnessed corruption in the council and she didn't trust him. She's like, no, I'm not giving this back to you guys. Okay. And to make matters worse, she also had fought an avatar of Sargeras in Northrend. Sargeras traveled to Azeroth when he discovered that the Titans may still be alive, and he managed to teleport a tiny portion of his power in the form of an avatar to investigate those claims. Egwene discovered Sargeras, and his demons were in Northrend, so she went there to face him.
Now, books of this battle can be found in-game. It's a story that every mage in Azeroth has heard. In the end, Egwene emerged as the victor, but not without a cost. Sargeras had allowed himself to lose that battle. Because when the body of his avatar died, a portion of the Titan soul entered Egwene and began to corrupt her mind. Egwene's distrust of the council only grew stronger now that Sargeras was in her mind. She remained as the guardian for over 700 years before she decided to resolve the issue of her mortality herself. She found herself a suitable man and seduced him to the point that they got married. And she gave birth to a child.
At the age of 700. Was our...
Hey, I mean, she was still looking good at that point.
She gets a magic eggs or something like that. I don't know.
Whatever. I mean, it makes sense to consider how powerful she was.
Sure.
Her eggs would be magical, right?
Magical IVF. <Lego. laughs>
Hey, it clearly worked.
Clearly worked.
Because that child she gave birth to, that was a Raven Medivh.
He was not born a bird, though. Just say no.
No. It's a human.
It's a little baby. Just,
yeah. Human man. It was a baby. He didn't come out as a man. Record. Let me just clear that up, because that'd be awkward and really painful. Anyways, shortly after she gave birth, Egwene passed all of the powers of the guardian into her child and cast a spell to keep them dormant until he was old enough. She peaced out, disappeared into the night, and left Medivh in the care of his father. But her powers of the guardian wasn't the only thing Egwene gave her child. The spirit of Sargeras entered Medivh while Egwene was still pregnant. Pretty sure she didn't know about that one.
No.
That would be awkward. No. Son, I'm sorry I left you. And hey, Sargeras is inside. It's fine.
You got Satan in your body too now. Just so you know.
Love you, bye!
Okay, bye!
The spirit of Sargeras is what eventually corrupted Medivh to the point that he became so paranoid of whispers of a burning legion he kept hearing about that he began searching for another world that might make sense of the random thoughts he kept hearing in his mind. So Medivh set out to find a world with the right warriors to best defend a world. And thanks to the whispers of Sargeras, he found the orcs on Draenor. Medivh eventually was able to make contact with Gul'dan, and the two of them began making preparations for the orcs to invade Azeroth. Gul'dan was obviously interested in conquering a lush, healthy world with plenty of food, and Medivh believed that there was an existential threat that was coming for Azeroth, and he needed the greatest fighting force in the universe to stop it. Even if that meant the orcs conquer humanity, it's fine, as long as Azeroth's saved, right? And, you know, Sir Garrus had him thinking some pretty wacky stuff, as you can probably imagine.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, much of that, Medivh and Gullman managed to open a portal between the two worlds. So, yay, they got a portal open. Which would be known as the Dark Portal. Mm-hmm. And the orcs poured through, and the first war had begun. So there you go, that's how you get the first war. And if you ever play the RTS, to get the correct ending of the war, you have to play as the orcs. Because they invaded the southern portion of Eastern Kingdoms, and they burnt the human city of Stormwind to the ground. So yeah, if you ever log into the game and you go into the Stormwind, that's not the first Stormwind. That's been rebuilt.
Nope.
But before Stormwind fell, the commander of the human nation, Anduin Lothar, discovered his childhood friend Medivh, and they were friends, was the reason the orcs were here. Okay, so he led a mission to Medivh's home in Karazhan. Lothar drove his sword into his friend and escaped back to Stormwind, where he led the evacuation of any survivors to Lordaeron. That was a human nation much further north. All right. Okay. That's where the undead's starting area is, in case you're curious.
Right.
Let's Lordaeron.
Yes.
Okay. The second war follows the events of the second RTS, right? The second video game, Warcraft, Tides of Darkness. And this time it's the Human Alliance that comes out on top. So after Lordaeron and the surrounding human nations and even the High Elves from Silvermoon defeated the orcs, there is a contingent of members of the Alliance that volunteered to lead an expedition through the Dark Portal and to chase the orcs into their homeworld to ensure they do not return. They're like, no, we can't have this stuff come back to Azeroth. No. The most notable leaders of this expedition were Ilaria Windrunner, Danath Trollbane, Khadgar, everybody likes Khadgar,
yeah,
Curdren Wildhammer, and Tyrallian. All right. Ilaria is the eldest daughter of the Ranger General of Silvermoon, and wanted to aid the humans in the fight against the Orcish Horde. Danath Trollbane is a member of a royal human family. Khadgar was actually Medivh's apprentice, in case you didn't know that. Curdren Wildhammer, he was the head of the Wildhammer Dwarven clan. And Tyrallian is a paladin that took over leadership of the combined alliance forces from Lothar when old Lothar died to Orgrim Doomhammer on Blackrock Mountain. Poor guy. I miss him already. So bad. It's terrible. Hi. During the invasion into Draenor, it was discovered that Ner'zhul was attempting to open more portals to other worlds where the Horde could conquer an easier world. They're like, all right, Azeroth, that was like hard mode. We'd like dial it back a couple. Let's go for an easier world. Well, that plan almost worked. But when he began opening worlds, he opened way more portals than he anticipated. Like, it's like he got the spell right, but I don't know. He like accidentally like clicked way too many like portals in his cart when he checked out or something. He's like, quantity 750. What the hell? So he got way too many portals. And those portals ripped Draenor apart. Like, is this,
it went explodey.
Yeah, it went explodey. It's like, imagine, like the way I've always kind of explained it is, imagine if you have a string attached to the side of a planet and then that string is attached to another world. Okay, that's fine. It's not that much tension. It's just like a little tension. Do that like 750 times and it just ripped the whole damn thing apart. It's just too much stress. Too much stress. And anyway, when that whole ripping of the world apart thing, it actually ripped the planet into the Twisting Nether. So yeah, Draenor don't exist anymore in reality. It's now in the Twisting Nether. It's bye-bye. And that's when it became Outland. Outland.
It's bye-bye.
Yes, yeah. It's like Alderaan, but it like swapped dimensions too. If the Death Star also made it go to, I don't know, well, the Twisting Nether. But there is no Twisting Nether in Star Wars. Whatever.
No. Well, after the Second War was over, there was a debate about what to do with the orcs that were still in Azeroth after the Dark Portal was closed. Eventually, it was decided to put them all in internment camps, because that's what you do, right? Well, do you remember the one orc clan that didn't drink Manaroth's blood? They were the Frostwolf clan, and they tried to warn the rest of the Horde what the cost of drinking the blood would do when they went to show them their child was born with green skin, even without drinking the blood. But that, all that got them was getting killed. My brain did not process those words together for some reason.
That's not again. A greatly formed sentence, but whatever. Just go with it.
No, it's fine. My brain was like, I don't know what's going on right now. Anyways, but all that this got them was getting killed by assassins. But they didn't kill their child. The orc baby was found by a man named Attilus Blackmore while hunting, and he decided he would take that orc child in and turn him into the perfect soldier. The strength of an orc with the brains of a man. His plan may have actually worked too, had he not been a horrible alcoholic and abusive ass of a person. Yeah. If he had treated this thrall with the respect Attilus Blackmore probably would have conquered all the human nations. That's what he really wanted to do. And yes, that orc baby was Thrall. They called him Thrall.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And this baby found in the snow, like Moses was found in the river. The similarities will continue. Again, it's Thrall. It's Thrall, we know. I jumped ahead, sorry. Thanks to the help of the one kind human to him, Teresa Foxton, Thrall managed to escape and would eventually lead an army of orcs out of the internment camps, only to return not just as a warrior, but the first orcish shaman since the elements abandoned them during the war of the against the Draenei. Thrall and his new orcish horde arrived at the castle gates of Dernhold. He tried to reason with Attilus, but rather than negotiate, he threw down the head of Teresa Foxton. I hate him so much. And things he did to Teresa, it's a whole other thing.
Horrible.
Fine.
Horrible guy.
I just can't. As you can imagine, for good reason, this pissed off Thrall. Like, he was enraged to the point that he knocked down the walls of the castle with an elaborate use of earth magic and an orcish river dance.
I had to put that in there.
Now I'm just imagining Thrall and a bunch of orcs like no, next
it's,
to him.
It's the way Christy Golden described the scene in, what is that one? It's not Rise of the Horde. It's the Lord of the Clans.
Yeah.
So Lord of the Clans, because Thrall has a really deep connection with the elements. And when he is doing earth elemental stuff, like he's got he's not wearing boots or anything. He's just like, bah, 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 yeah. Like he's doing this like river dance and stuff. Like, that's cool. I don't know. Probably more like the Haka dance kind of thing. You know, like the kind of thing. Yeah.
Right.
It's pretty sweet. I like the way that Christy wrote that.
Yeah.
All right. So the next time we really hear from Thrall is Warcraft 3. Okay. Warcraft 3. He's being woken up from a dream about needing to go to the forgotten lands of Kalimdor by a mysterious looking man that goes by the Prophet. And since this is getting really long already, I'm just going to tell you that the Prophet is a resurrected Medivh that no longer has the spirit of Sargeras in him. So he's a good guy now. He's actually trying to make up for the crap that he did. He's like, okay, I'll fix this.
Right.
All right. Anyway, Thrall listens to the Prophet mostly because, hey, what do we have to lose? Maybe we can find a place where we can call home. Like, it's like, oh, leave this place where everyone hates us? Sure. Don't show the day. All right. The Prophet wasn't just talking to Thrall, though. He was actually trying to talk to everyone of importance, including the King of Lordaeron, Taranis Menethil, an entire council of nobles from the surrounding cities. The human kingdoms did not listen to Medivh's warning, but there is something good that needs their attention. Something going on. Not good. This is not good. I don't know why I said good. There was something going on that needed their attention.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say.
This is not good. See, there had been reports of a plague going on in the area of the human nations, and they were debating if they should quarantine the infected. That's a no-go. Mm-mm, no, we can't do that. But they did want to investigate what's going on. So the king decided to send his very best men, led by his son, and here's another name you need to remember, Prince Arthas Menethil. Yeah, familiar name, right? As well as a very old friend of the prince's, a very talented mage by the name of Jaina Pradmore. And yeah, this is the first time they are introduced in the story. It's Warcraft 3 is when they pop up. So back in the day, the two used to date, and it got really serious. So that there was like talks of marriage and children and I bet the kids will be blonde too, and that kind of freaked them out.
Yeah,
but they've got a job to do. They can't drag on the past, so the two of them get investigating the plague, only to find out it's being spread by some infected grain. Oh no, not the grain. Well, they track down the source, and it's coming from a bunch of members of a cult of the damned. That's cult of the damned. Who joins something called a cult of the damned? That's stupid. All right.
I mean, if you're going to join a cult, do one with an epic name, right?
It should be like the Happy Sunshine Cult. Like, you know, it's always usually or like,
no, it's the Cult of the Damned.
Cult of the Damned. Like, I don't know. Come on, you guys just listen to too much metal music or something. Right. All right. And their presumed leader, Kel'Thuzad. It's a very scary name. Not a problem for our intrepid duo, though. Arthas and Jaina made quick work of the Necromancer. Seriously, there's like one mission in the game. Just killed that guy. He's dead. Yeah. So easy. Bad news, though, is even with the leader dead, the grain shipments have already gone out. It's been distributed around the nation. The big problem was that it went a lot of it went to a very large city by the name of Stratholme.
Now, there's an important detail that Jin left out about the plague, other than the fact that it's not good. It doesn't just kill its victims. They're raised from the dead as frickin' zombies under the control of the Cult of the Damned Necromancers. So when Arthas, Jaina, and even Arthas' boss as a paladin, Uther, Lightbringer, arrive at Stratholme too late. The grain has already been distributed, and people are about to begin to turn. Arthas uses his "I'm the Prince" card and makes the executive decision to cull the city. Just kill them all. Jaina and Uther, as you can imagine, wanted nothing to do with any of this. They can't believe that he's seriously suggesting killing civilians before they've even turned into zombies without even trying to help them first. So they take off. They can't be part of that. But Arthas moves forward with his plan. And when Arthas gets to the end of the city, he finds Kel'Thuzad's boss, the dreaded Lord Mal'Ganis, just taunts Arthas, saying, "Na na na, catch me if you can, I'll be in Northrend, wee!" And Arthas says his line, "To the ends of the earth!
To the ends of the earth!"
"I'll get you, I'll chase you to the ends of the earth." It's very dramatic.
Very dramatic.
So Arthas then sets sail for Northrend as soon as possible and met up with an old friend of his, Mardin Bronzebeard. I love the Bronzebeards. And when he arrived, he was really happy to see him. Mardin told him the story he had heard about a powerful weapon that could help him with this, you know, Mal'Ganis fellow. So the two of them set off together to find that sword. Oh, real quick. Remember that prophet? Well, he met up with Jaina shortly after she bailed on Arthas, and she used her connection with her family, the Proud Moors from Kul Tiras, to sail to this forgotten land, as in Kalimdor.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's like, my brother's like, forgotten land.
Okay, it's just like, yeah. It's so forgotten, I forgot about it.
It sounds so fancy when you say forgotten land.
Calendar.
All right, anyways, back to Arthas. They found the sword. It's named Frostmourne. And once you know, it says the sword is cursed. But Arthas doesn't care. He just took the sword and nearly killed Mardin in the process. And the jackass leaves him there for dead. Just walks away. Just pieces out. And you can tell our goody-goody paladin isn't quite so goody-goody anymore.
Yeah, so we're going to quickly summarize all this. Arthas defeated Mal'Ganis, and he fell under the influence of the Blade. Yeah, Frostmourne, it'll mess with you. Arthas started talking with the ghost of Kel'Thuzad, because Kel'Thuzad's like, "Ha ha, you killed me. I'm going to haunt the shit out of you." So that's what he's doing. Well, yeah. His ghost pal lets him know that he's not the leader of this cult. In fact, the leader of this cult is the Lich King. Yeah. Oh, and Arthas kind of works for him now, too, because, you know, you picked up a sword. Gotcha. Gotcha, bitch. Which is cool to Arthas now, because the sword really got his grip on him. So much so that when he returned home from Northrend, killed his own dad. Succeeding you, father. Yeah, killed his own dad. And he made a new empire of dead people.
Yep.
Arthas was instructed that while there are no hard feelings about him killing Kel'Thuzad, it was also his responsibility to resurrect him, though. So that was his next job. So after he killed his dad, he's like, "So, Kel'Thuzad, yeah, we kind of need him. Kind of important. So we got to bring him back." All right. And the only way to do that, well, maybe not the only way, but the most convenient way at the moment, was to get to the Sunwell and toss him in. Well, so what is the Sunwell exactly? Well, where is that? Well, it's in the heart of Silvermoon City. Right? Remember Silvermoon? Those are the High Elves. The High Elves. It's where the High Elves live. Or, well, technically, it's on an island next to Silvermoon. It's Quel'Thalas. You get the idea. All right.
Yeah.
So Arthas carried the corpse of Kel'Thuzad all the way to the High Elves' capital, where he met Illyria Windrunner's sister, the new Ranger General of Silvermoon, Sylvanas. And Sylvanas was so annoying to Arthas because she was defending her homeland. Oh no, she's so annoying for defending her home, right?
How dare she?
How dare she do her job? He decided he was going to raise her as a banshee so she can't rest after he killed her. And to make matters worse, Arthas commanded Sylvanas to attack her own people as a banshee, and she couldn't resist. But she knew what was going on the whole time. So this is why Sylvanas hates Arthas. Like, really hates him. Like a lot. Like a lot. Arthas was successful in resurrecting Kel'Thuzad as a lich as well. But in doing so, the Sunwell was corrupted, and it would eventually be destroyed. But this would eventually lead the elves discovering that they were super horribly addicted to magic of the Sunwell. And they're all suffering after this destruction of the wells. And their prince, Kel'Thas Sunstrider, and the prince of the elves, Kel'Thas Sunstrider, he wasn't in Silvermoon during the attack, so obviously he survived. And when he returned home, he vowed he would find a solution for their mana addiction. That didn't go so well. But let's check in on what happened over in the lost continent of Kalimdor. You see, it turns out Medivh was warning people about that the Legion invasion was coming. Yeah. Just like the War of the Ancients. So this is the next time that the friggin' Legion attacked. All right, demons are coming through and trying to destroy the world tree that's covering the new Well of Eternity. Fighting gets crazy enough that even Archimonde himself joins in the fight. All right, so the joint forces of the humans that follow Jaina, Thrall's Horde, and all of the allies that have joined them. So there was like the trolls, the Tauren, a couple goblins in there too, probably. And even the Night Elves, who had been watching for this event for 10,000 years, because, you know, Nazdormu made him immortal. They're like, you killed him last time, maybe you kill him again. They totally helped. Sadly, though, if the Legion tries this again in 10,000 years, the Night Elves won't be here for the next time, because they had to give up their immortality to defeat Archimonde. Yeah, Malfurion was all and blew a little horn and destroyed the world tree. And, well, not really totally destroyed, but like detonated all the cool power within the world tree. Yeah, and it killed Archimonde in the process, as Archimonde was like, I don't know, he's like, I'm on a tree. Wow. I don't know what he was going to do while he was up there, but got his ass exploded when he got up in that tree.
It was very dramatic, too.
Yeah, it was very dramatic.
A lot of wisps.
Yeah. Or either that, or we need to get a second opinion instead of just trusting Malfurion, because the last plan that he had to blow up the whole world, and this time he figured he'd blow up a tree. So, I don't know. Maybe stop telling Malfurion to do what he thinks is best. He just blows things up, and I don't know. It seems to work. It works. It just has some pretty drastic downsides to it.
Right. That escalated quickly. All right. Back to Arthas. Not long after bringing Kel'Thuzad back as a lich, Kel'Thuzad and Arthas took some psychic damage when the Lich King up in Northrend gave them both the message, get the hell back here, shit's going down. But to understand this part, we need to go back just a little bit. So when Ner'zhul, right, he was opening all the portals that eventually made Draenor grow explodey, it got sucked into the Twisting Nether. He jumped through the portal, and either it was planned this way or just stupid bad luck, the portal Ner'zhul jumped into was right into the hands of Kil'jaeden. And old KJ wasn't happy with the way things went down between them. In fact, Kil'jaeden hated Ner'zhul and got to work torturing him very intensely, very badly for a very long time. After that got boring, Kil'jaeden decided he could use Ner'zhul and destroyed his body, but kept his spirit alive. After everything Ner'zhul already endured, right? Now this is happening. He was forcibly jammed into the helmet known as the Helm of Domination, and his spirit was jammed into the helm. It was placed in a magical block of ice and like sent, like Kil'jaeden just like threw it, hurled it to Azeroth, where it landed in Northrend. Also important thing to note, when the Lich King was freaking out, telling Arthas and Kel'Thuzad to hurry up, he was losing control of the zombie scourge. So Lich King at this point, it's not Arthas, right? It's
Ner'zhul.
The spirit of Ner'zhul in the armor and the ice and everything, right? He's losing control of the zombie scourge. It's an issue. And one of the undead the Lich King had lost control of was Sylvanas. So for now, all you need to know about Sylvanas is that she got her body back. She almost killed Arthas. And if it wasn't for Kel'Thuzad showing up in time to save him, she would have succeeded. Sylvanas will be a much more important part of the story later on. And to wrap up our story today, the issue that was happening was the Frozen Throne, where the Lich King was being attacked by Illidan Stormrage. So how did he get out of his prison?
All right. So Illidan was let out of prison by Tyrande Whisperwind during the invasion of the demons during the Third War, right? She figured a demon hunter would be really useful to have on their side. But things got really weird after he ate the skull of Gul'dan. Yeah, he died.
as it does.
Yeah. In case you didn't know, Gul'dan died during the Second War. He kind of defected, did some really stupid stuff. He tried to bring back the Tomb of Sargeras for more power, got himself killed by a bunch of demons. And Illidan said, "Om nom 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 nom." And he ate the skull.
Yep.
Got really weird. Well, Tyrande and Malfurion were pretty pissed when he did that. So he was just like, "All right, guys, I know I screwed up. That was a really tasty snack, though." And he just peaced out to Outland. Like, literally in the campaign, he was like, "Portal!" And he just went to Outland.
Yeah.
All right. The problem with this plan is the Legion was still upset with him for double-crossing them back during the War of the Ancients. Like they're pissed at Illidan. They're like, they know this guy. So in a desperate gamble, Illidan is like, "Hey, Kil'jaeden, buddy, I would never double cross you. I was triple crossing them." So like quadruple, quintuple, like so many crosses.
So many
crosses. Seriously, give me a mission. I'll do it. So they probably called his bluff, but they gave him the mission to kill the Lich King. Illidan agreed. Anyway, why did the Legion want the Lich King dead? Wasn't he their creation?
Well, that's a great question. The Lich King was supposed to kill off the world so the Legion could come in and eventually just mop up whatever was left. That was the plan, so we think. The only problem was the Legion tortured the hell out of Ner'zhul before sticking him in the helm. So guess what? He hated the Legion. He wasn't going to go do shit for them. And the fact that they thought he would was just baffling. He had a new plan. Nope. His new plan was to kill off the world. I was trying to be creative. It didn't work. It's fine. His new plan was to kill off the world and create a singular unified fighting force that can defeat the Legion when they return. And the Legion got wind of this and tasked Illidan with killing Ner'zhul. Well, let's jump forward a bit here and just say, obviously, the Lich King prevailed and sent Illidan back to Outland empty-handed. Arthas made this very dramatic long climb to the top of the Ice Crown, put on the Helm of Domination, and when he did that, Ner'zhul's and Arthas's spirits basically combined into a single body, and the first words out of Lich King's mouth was, "Now we are one."
Now, at this point, we have pretty much got you caught up to the World of Warcraft itself. Like I said, this was Warcraft 101, not World of Warcraft 101. Yeah. A lot of backstory. Yes. Like I said, a lot of background information before we even get to the game. But that's where we'll have to end it for this episode, because we're getting a little lengthy in here. All right, if you enjoyed this episode, let us know, and we continue this high-level overview through the events of the game, because, hey, I actually know all this crap. I just wrote all this just one night. It was fun. So I'll do it again if I need to.
You got crazy skills, man. Crazy skills.
Yeah, this was all pretty much 100% scripted episode, like just a little bit of riffs of practically 20 pages worth of notes. How fun was that? But yeah, that's it. So seriously, if you like this, if this is something that you want us to do more of, because you're just like, "Can you just explain what happened here?" Like I don't know. Like there's plenty of points in the story that I'm like, that it's very confusing, that I'd be happy to explain. So what did you think, Allie? How did we do? Did we do a pretty good summary?
I thought so.
Yeah, did we leave any important bits out? I mean, there's plenty of bits that we left out. There's so many bits that we left out.
But when we're trying to do such an overarching summary like this, like you have to kind of leave the bits out and go for the main points. And I feel like we got most of the main points in there.
Yeah, I mean, that was literally from the beginning of all time all the way up until the beginning of World of Warcraft. And right. Yeah, that's the obviously not the entire backstory. But those are actually the major defining points where like all of the story is like hinging off of. So yeah, that's it. So yeah, it's your primer. That's all you really need to get started. If you understand this, you can start diving in. You know, the rest of it will start making sense from there. Yep. But with that, I think we can start wrapping it up.
I think we can, which means it's my time to thank patrons.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. It's part of the show. Well, we like to say a quick thank you to all the patrons that support us and keep the show going. If you'd like to join their ranks and support the show, you can do that by going to patreon.com/livelaughlore. While we love and appreciate every single one of our patrons, seriously, you guys are amazing. We do have to give a special thank you to our top patrons, and that includes Scissor Lord, Monkey Valhalla, Rocky Monkey. It feels weird to not do that, honestly. Shalil, Nickelobre, Craig Lemus, Ickis, Nadun, Night Warrior, Mud, Afardon, Dungeon Master Burke, Greybeard, and Dracorus. Thank you all so very much. You are awesome.
That is true. You are all fantastic.
Stories. There's nothing in the world more powerful than a good story.
All right, so just like all episodes, we like to share some positive news from out in the world, and this was no different. So, even though the rest of the episode was different, you know, we just don't learn an entirely scripted thing like today mostly was. Today, I wanted to bring your attention to the newest addition to the National Park Service here in the United States. It is the, I don't know how to say this for sure, but I believe I'm going to go with the Amache National Historic Site.
I believe that's right.
Yeah, National Historic Site. Near Granada, Colorado. There you go. It's Colorado.
Yeah.
In case you're wondering, that's in the southeast Colorado, about 3.5 hours from Denver. So it's not like Allie's popping in there every other weekend. So that's a long drive.
Definitely not. Gas is pretty pricey for that kind of drive every other weekend. I've not actually been there yet, but. Yeah.
All right. So Amache, it was a former incarceration site for the unjustly detained Japanese Americans during World War II. One of about 10 other sites like it across the country. And when they were kind of actually, you know, being interviewed about this and being given talks about what's going on, they said, as a nation, we must face the wrongs of our past in order to build a more and just equitable future. This was Secretary Harland said in a statement, the Interior Department has a tremendous honor of stewarding Americans' public lands and natural and cultural resources to tell a complete and honest story of our nation's history. To fully understand the history of the site, visitors can take a self-guided driving an audio tour of 11 points of interest, or even join an interpretive tour led by student volunteers. And Amache, and they continue to, in a quote, it says, Amache's addition to the national park system is a reminder that a complete account of the nation's history must include our dark chapters of injustice. To heal and grow as a nation, we need to reflect on past mistakes, make amends, and strive to form a more perfect union. Yeah, so now it's become a national park to remember those shitty moments in our history. So it's important to remember those, so you don't do them again. Just don't do that. Don't do that again. Well, since this is only 3.5 hours, it's a much longer drive for me. I mean, you think you're going to pop in at one point?
I mean, maybe. Make like a little weekend trip or something.
Yeah, it could be. It'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty big, and there's not a ton there because most of it has been torn down. But there's a lot of foundations and a water tower and a bunch of like what's left behind because it's kind of like a spooky, kind of eerie site that it is now because everything is just like pretty much wiped out and it's just like the foundations and the buildings that's been left behind.
Well, I think I've driven through Granada before, so it wouldn't be that hard of a drive either.
Yeah, Granada.
Check it out.
It's still about, I think, it's like about 30 minutes away from Granada. But I was curious when I looked at the map. So yeah. Yeah. There you go. That's it. We're gonna head on out of here today. This wasn't too bad. But yeah, we got through this quicker than I thought we would. Awesome job, us.
And our listeners get gold stars for going through class.
Well, unless you turned it off, you're not listening at this point. But
no gold star for them.
Thank you so much for listening to Live Laugh Lore. If you have a topic or a question you'd like us to discuss, send us an email at livelaughlorecast@gmail.com. If you want to support us on Patreon, you can do so by going to patreon.com/livelaughlore, and you can keep the show going for as little as $1 an episode. You can watch Ali live on Twitch Sunday nights over at twitch.tv/AliAndres, and you can watch Jin Monday nights at twitch.tv/JinsJoint. You can also follow the show on Twitter at @live_laugh_lore. You can follow Jin on Twitter at @JinsJoint, and you can follow Ali at @AliAndresK. Meanwhile, be kind and take care.